With Aries, we started out with a force. And any time there is an assertion of a force, a field develops around it. And between force and field, there is an oscillation, which is like Gemini. Then there is an absorption or a reabsorption. We're talking about like stellar history or something like that. And then what happens is very leonine, radiance. Leo is a sign of radiance. It lives to pour out its own being totally, both as warmth and as love and as light. So this is the kind of sign that we're looking at this evening. With the Aries, it's like an assertion. And to that assertion, responsibility accrues. And that responsibility is usually Taurus. But if you have to carry something out, you need practical abilities. And those practical abilities are indicated by Gemini, that tool-making ability. But before you can really complete a project, you have to get the feel for it. And that feel is Cancer. When you have the feel for something and begin actually outpouring, it's sort of a reassertion, but a reassertion with full strength, you have Leo. Your own childhood is indicated by the first house in Aries. It's your initial assertion. But when you reassert yourself, it is through your children, and the fifth house is the house of children. And Leos normally love children. All right, let's look at it all in a different way. If Aries represents biting, incisive biting, and Taurus represents chewing, and Gemini represents transport or swallowing, the chemical digestion is indicated by Cancer. But before you can make food part of you, you have to overcome it and keep it overcome. That is to say, food can only be yours as long as your will holds it together. This is why a lot of vegetarians are vegetarians. Because in animal food, the will of the animal is still in the food, that, you know, that put that body together still remains in the food. And it's harder to digest and overpower animal food and keep it overpowered. But the process of overpowering or of overwhelming is Leo. And energy is what is associated with assertion. That's with Aries. But with Leo, when there is power, you're talking about will. With Leo, we're talking about usually the most powerful sign in the zodiac. Scorpio has the ability to be as powerful or even more powerful, but what happens is it gets so much involved with self-negation that it usually doesn't come to full power. So if the first house represents a creative urge, and the second house represents material gathering, and the third house represents the elementary thought, and the fourth house represents incubation, well, when you finally get your poem written or your painting painted, that expression is the fifth house. The fifth house is expression. The third house is communication. With the third house, you can go back and forth, and you communicate with each other, and it's check, counter-check, all of those kinds of things. But expression is much more than that. You put yourself into expression. Expression comes from the heart. Like, I used to do a lot of letter writing with people. Nowadays, it's email. But you can tell the people who are communicators and who are expressors and who are neither and who are both. An expressor, even if they don't have any communicative skills, you feel the person. You because they've somehow managed to express their being even though they might have not have the most appropriate words. Each of the signs has something of a drawback about it. Aries is pushy. Taurus is entrenched. And Gemini is flighty. And Cancer is subjective. But Leo is dominating. He said that Aries ruled leaders. And that's just the way Leo would have it. Leo would have the leader be out front. But Leo is going to rule. It's going to rule even though leader. And it would sooner be in the center of the pack than out front. It gets full attention anyway because it's got all of that. So it's the whole idea, I rule or I dominate. And of course, since all individuals are individuals and they're all foci of the one universal spirit, no one really has the right to dominate over anyone else. Even the gods, which have much more creative power and capacity than we do, they don't interfere with our free will. They impel us one way or another, but they never compel us. And I think we ought to afford each other the same right. If Aries represents instigation, and Taurus represents stuff, and Gemini represents thought, and Cancer represents imagination, what Leo represents is creative love. We're talking about more than drive here. You can't express yourself, you can't create without having the love to do so. Now, sometimes that love is overwhelming, and sometimes it comes out in forms that are so forceful that they seem cruel, but there is a fullness of love where Leo is involved. This is the symbol for Leo, and it's sort of a Rorschach test because different people see different things in it. Some people see it as a lion's mane and tail, which would be some kind of statement of pride and self-vainglory or something like that. People who have had to work under strongly leonine people see it as a whip. Yeah, these are the firing bosses. When they're in charge, they have dominion and power. Of course, Leo, if it's a male, would say, that's obviously a sperm, and it's a proof of my masculinity. Yeah, Leo men are quite something. But it's really a Rorschach test. It's because it's a stylized or artistified bastardization of the Greek lambda, which stands for lion. All right. You talk about animals for each of the signs of the zodiac. Now, some signs of the zodiac have many, many different kinds of animals. Leo does not. Leo has a very, very few. And the most obvious is the lion. It is kingly. It is royal. It is noble. In ancient Persia, when Cyrus was king, he was not raised as king. He was raised as a street child. But even when he was very young, he was marshaling all of the other street kids around because he had that quality of dominion in him. He had that quality like, I am a king. This is what my nature is. You're born to master. And lions are masters. They're inwardly powerful. Sometimes with no outer indication. Male lions, you can have one crotchety old male lion that always gets the women because he's got that inward power. And that's sort of the leonine quality that you're looking for. Everybody knows all these things right now because everybody watches me through shows on television. Okay. Last time we said that the upper part of the body is the part of the body that is solar. The lower, yes, is solar. And it is, if it's pronounced, it is extroverted. The lower part of the body is lunar. And if it is pronounced, the person is much more guilt-ridden and much more introverted in things like that. We pointed to the prime lunar animal of all of those that I can think of is the kangaroo. The lion is obviously a solar animal. The hind end of a lion is relatively small, and it's all tapered way down. So we have here a very expressive animal. The roar of a lion can be heard on the Serengeti 5 miles away. That's expressive. That's really outpouring. Of course, like all of the cats, large and small, it tends to be vicious, especially when it's hungry. And it does not like to be irritated. It's an interesting thing to watch it in human psychology. If you watch leonine people, you have a lot of strong leonine influence in them. They're trying to be above it. And they try to maintain their dignity, like nothing's going to bother me. But they're not relaxed enough like the Sagittarius's. The Sagittarius's are easygoing and nothing does get to them. But the Leo people, if something annoys them, they get irritable. And you can see the struggle inside of them. On one hand, they're trying to be big-spirited like a lion. But on the other hand, they're bothered and they're irritable. If you look at a lion, it has teeth that is meant for tearing things apart. That doesn't mean that they are analytical. We haven't come to the analytical signs yet. It's not that kind of tearing apart. It's because the animals know that where all the minerals and all the enzymes and things like that are where the blood is. So they tear a carcass apart to get at the organs. They go for the organs first because that's what's most important. I don't know if you've seen it, but Leonardo da Vinci, like most of the people in the Renaissance, was a student of physiognomy. And that is the study of faces. Probably the best physiognomist that has ever been was a man called a Swiss minister called John Philip Lavater. But most of the Renaissance painters did study, and they studied physiognomy, and often what they did is they tried to show how animal features were related to human expressions. And if you look at Leonardo's notebooks, he's got one of a lion snarling, and he has the lines in the lion's face exaggerated, and he has a human snarling right next to it. And you can see that it's this, the same kind of thing. But they aren't always snarly. If you look at most lions, they sleep most of the time. They don't sleep for the same reason that Taurus likes to sleep. The champion sleepers are where Taurus is really strong. Actually, Leos sleep little because they have tremendous recuperative and rejuvenescent powers, especially in the ascendant, they recruit quite easily. But there's that, there's the quality of what? I'm not a Leo, I have one planet there, but I guess I could write a treatise on the relationship between egoism and laziness. That's, yes, like, I'm too good to have to work, or I'm too good to have to do this. And if I've accomplished something, even some petty little thing, I'm so self-satisfied that I deserve a nap. And that is a leonine kind of psychology. Leo and the two Jupiterian signs are usually the most lazy signs in the zodiac. They're singular in attitude, especially in males where there is a strong leonine influence. There's a singularity. It has to be only one. And this is the famous story by Aesop. Remember, we've been saying all along that the Aesop fables are actually all quite astrological. We saw how grasshoppers fit in perfectly with Aries. And we haven't got to the ants yet, but they're coming. The quality, not quantity, is the Aesop fable for the lion. There is this fox, what do you call a female? A fox bitch. Vixen, that's what it is. And she's got, in a dog it's a bitch. It's, come on, I'm not laying anything out on it. But she's got four little puppies. And she's walking along and they're trotting after. Whelp, I think they call them whelps, don't they? But if you're right, I'll end up with whelps. And she's so proud of her brood that she says to the lion, why is it that you have only one and I have four? And the lion sort of looks up a little bit and says, the lion's a lion. And that's sort of the attitude that it's quality, not quantity. And of course, of all the animals, lions are the most powerful. Now, this is something that there are faults that people have that are unconscious faults. And one of the unconscious faults of Leo is it doesn't realize how strong and overwhelming it is. But if a lion gives one little swat, it can take down a beast, a large beast, in one little swat. And sometimes when Leo lays it on you, they think it's just a little tap, a little love tap, but it isn't. It's really a hard hammering kind of consciousness. And that's a leonine quality. Tigers, obviously, they're ravenous, and they're extremely violent. Look at a tiger and you see what happens when all of that power gets out of control. Leo is opposite of Aquarius, and the symbol for Aquarius is the androgyne water bearer. It's a human sign. And there is an antipathy between humans and lions. We have man-eating lions. I don't think they eat humans. Man-eating tigers. I don't think they eat humans for food. Because if they did, they would be eating all the time. Because, again, they have to overpower the food. And the willpower of a human being that creates a human body is very hard to overcome. And so even if a lion could overpower the will that is in the flesh of a human, it wouldn't hang on to it long. I believe what happens with man-eating tigers is that they are possessed. That people who are downtrodden and that are outcasts in society, somebody kills them or something like dead, and they possess the body of the tiger. And they get their vengeance. And they keep on getting in until they get shot, of course. Something like that. Everything about the big cats is tough. The whiskers of the tiger are tough, very tough. There is a famous Oriental torture called death by lion's whiskers. We're talking about cruelty now, so we can talk about all of those things. What's his name? Famous goldsmith who did the Perseus that's in the Garden of the Medici. Benvenuto Cellini. Benvenuto Cellini was always fighting with the Pope, and the Pope threw him in a dungeon for a while, and he put diamond in his food, very fine powdered diamond, because he knew that it wouldn't be moved by the peristaltic action and that it would eventually irritate and make holes in the colon. That there are deaths like that, or are tortures like that, that people don't know about, that where they take tiger's whiskers or certain kinds of bamboo, they make little tiny slivers of them, and they put them in the food, and the tiger's whiskers hook, and then gradually the peristaltic action causes rips and tears in the intestines. Panthers, very sleek. And this is the thing about Leo. It will stay in repose. But when it's in repose and it's ready, it moves into action really quickly. It's off. It's swift. It's sudden. The cheetahs are like that. Extremely vital. Another big cat, the pumas, the mountain lions. They're extremely frontal. They never turn their back to you. They never turn their back even to an enemy. I heard an interview at one time with a man that had traveled many years with the circus, and where they had all kinds of wild animals, and fights would break out between the big cats. And every time there was a fight between the big cats, the mountain lion always won. Because it never presented its back. Would fall on its back, and it was only front, and it would just go like that and eviscerate the cats. It's quite a thing. Bobcats and lynx. Very wild, very unmanageable. There's something, I don't mean to say this in a literal sense, but there's something feral about the leonine nature. It's something, you know, a cat is never really tame. A cat is not tame like a dog is tame. You can trust the dog with its food, and you can put the food right in front of the dog and say, don't eat, and the dog will not eat. You can't do that with a cat. You know, there's something wild, there's something untamable about it. This is why people often are fascinated by strongly leonine people of the opposite sex, because there is that wild fascination there that you'd like to either overcome or tame or do something like that. And then we have all those domestic cats. We can't possibly go into all the cat-like things, even though the cat lovers would want to be certain that we did. Cat lovers can't get enough of cats. They're proud. They're aloof. Unless they want the attention, they're aloof. And they're almost disdainful. You don't give them just the right food, they'll disdain it. You know, and sometimes it's an honor for a cat to even walk in the same room that you're in. And it's a high honor for them to walk between your legs, you know, it's that kind of a thing. The Egyptians thought cats were luminary. That is, that they were ruled by the sun and the moon, because their eyes would get larger or smaller according to the light that was, amount of light that was in the air, and that was the way they saw the sun. cats, or at least most cats, dislike water. And this is something, again, that that aloof, proud stance of the lion doesn't like. And we've been saying last time we talked about cancer, it is water, and water represents emotion. And Leo does not like displays of emotion. It knows that it's one. It does, but you don't have to snivel. It's that kind of quality. Affectionate, extremely affectionate, but on its own terms. It'll purr with delight until it's saturated, and it'll bite you. I had a friend that had a cat that was about as long as a yardstick with the tail stretched out. A long, long cat. His name was Oliver. And the cat was really friendly. And you pet the cat, and it would start drooling and everything. And when it got to the point that it started drooling, then you had to quit. If you didn't know any better, because all at once it would reach capacity, and it would just turn around, and it just wham! It would give you a really strong bite. And this is one of the signs that by affection is flatterable. Even though Leo is the king, and even though Leo is the center and the heart of all things, it still likes flattery and it likes adulation, things like that. I once saw a great spiritual teacher who was Leonine, and she was in her waning ages, up in her 80s or 90s, somewhere around up in there, and she really liked the adulation, and that just went counter to everything I believed in, where humility is what's supposed to be. Cats can be quite fierce, even aggressive. Siamese cats were attack cats. They guarded the palace, and all along the walls of the palace were Siamese cats, and if you tried to approach too closely, they jumped off and they were trained to take your eyes out. It's that kind of quality. The males are loners. We all know about tough alley cats. And they just, you know, they never give up. I've seen cats that are rickety jointed, but they'll still fight with other cats. They just, you know, they're it's like they have to be there. They have to overpower. Do you know that in order for a male to mate with a female cat, he has to overpower her and he has to bite her in the neck, which is why if you take something like a bottle off of a milk bottle and put a collar that is a cone on, that cat can never mate because it can't be overpowered and bitten in the neck. It's you know, it's a way that you improve the species. Only the strong are the ones that are doing the fertilization. Female cats are cooperative, but they're self-sufficient and cooperative at the same time. There is a certain amount of vanity. Cats will preen even to their own detriment with hairballs and things like that. We're back in the fiery signs again. We said that sheep's wool had a high etheric charge. Well, cats have an extremely high vital charge. More people are allergic to cats than to sheep. You can see the charge. You know, when a cat, you ever see a cat arch its back and see all the hair stand on end? That's really quite something. I had an experience once like that. I had a sweetheart that was a lover, and she was really a lover. She was sort of built like a baby shrimp tank. And the shape of the physical body isn't what counts. And I was waiting for her one time at her house, and I was laying on a sofa. And I had my head on, you know, one of those sofas with the big arms like that. I was laying there with my head on the arm. And I was sort of half asleep, half awake, and her cat came along the back of the sofa. And as the cat came up, I could see or I could feel the energy billowing. You couldn't hear the sound of the cat, but you could hear the energy billowing, or you could, you could feel it like it was, not like a wind, but something like that. And it got to within a couple of feet, and then I could feel my own energy going out to meet it. And, my skin got prickly and everything else. And if a person doesn't have a strong vitality, something like Virgo rising or something like that, the vitality that is in a cat can produce allergy. It isn't all just chemical. It's just an energy thing. Of course, the cats sleep, just like the lions sleep, but not for the same reason. They get their lessons. They get their understandings when they're asleep. They get dreams put at them. And it's said, I've never tried it, and I think it would be an act of cruelty to do so, but if you keep a cat awake for 24 hours without any sleep, they cannot live. I've never tried it, and it would be interesting to see. This is sort of a bizarre night tonight, isn't it? Playful. A cat catches the same mouse a dozen times. And it likes to, it goes for easy pickings if it can. It'll do it, it'll catch that mouse, and the mouse will be barely alive, and the cat will give it an opening, and it'll think, this time I'm going to get away. And the cat, it likes playing with things and toying with things. But on the other hand, the cat is very attentive. If a cat is watching a mouse hole or watching an area where a mouse has been recently, it will not take its attention away. You can pick the back end of the cat up and move it, and the front end will still be looking at, still be focused on where it wants to be focused. You missed all the sidelong comments about Sagittarius. You have to have a little bit of teasing in there. Generous. Kitties bring you all kinds of presents. Yeah. Extremely proud. Cat fights. Prolific. Reasonably prolific. They're very expressive. Beyond purrs, they have all kinds of whines and hisses and snarls and things like that. They're educatable. It's not easy. Sometimes it's self-education. On the farm where I grew up, we had barn cats to keep the mice out of the hay and things, all the things that barn cats do. And the thing was that we always had one more cat than there was room around the cat tray. The cat tray was an old pie tin. Put it up with fill it up with milk, and the cats would all drink out of there. But there was always one more cat than there was room for. And we had a cat called Pinky, and Pinky was sort of the alpha male, and he came in late always. And, it was his duty to come in late. And he comes striding in, or strutting in, or something like that. All these cats would be around the bowl. And he was big. He could have pushed any of them out. But rather than lower his dignity to do that, he would just reach in, he'd grab the pan, and pull it away. And he'd have the pan to himself for a few seconds, and then the other. And then he wouldn't fight with him. They'd nudge him out, and he'd do the same thing again. I had a girlfriend. That was a Gemini. And she had a cat named McGovern, because the cat was born when McGovern was running for president. And she said, "You'll never do it." I had McGovern trained so that getting up on the bed was out of bounds. And she couldn't believe it, but I got the cat trained. But I'm sure that the second that I was out of the room, he was up on the bed. But you can train a cat. It's not an easy task. They're mysterious. Anything that is self-contained, as self-contained as Leo can be, it doesn't have to go outside of itself. And anything that is itself in itself is complete. It's filled with wisdom. It's filled with everything it needs. And everything outside of it are details that are created from it, so to speak. And because they're details, they don't have that same wholeness, that same totality. And because they are incomplete, that which is complete seems a mystery to them. And that's the psychology, if you're working with Aries, that is a very important thing to understand. There may not be something really profound, but if they're not paying attention to you, or if they're doing their own thing or something like that, they're complete in themselves. Leo, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. Leo's there. let's see, a couple other animals, a little bit to talk about. Last time we said that moths, which are usually completely nocturnal, are ruled by Cancer, while butterflies are completely diurnal. Leo doesn't want secrets. And that's a very hard, sometimes you find secretive things in a leonine personality, and it's always a tough thing for the leonine person to bear. Butterflies are light, and they're bright, and they're happy, and they're cheerful, and they're colorful. All of those are signs that talk to Leo. You don't find many glum Leos. There was a period back around Saturn and Pluto conjoined the Sun that there were, I've even seen a few whipped Leos born in that time, but some of them are a little dark. But for the most part, Leos are almost always cheery. Even after they just chewed you out and fired you, they're still cheery. And the wings of a butterfly are perfect heat dispersers. We'll talk about animal cruelty again, because there are engineering researchers that catch butterflies and raise butterflies so they can pull their wings off and burn them, because the spots and such on the wings of the butterfly are perfect for dispersing heat. In fact, some people even believe that some of the propelling of the butterfly has to do with the dispersion of heat. It's a big thing, because dispersing heat inside of a computer where you've got a lot of software and you want to disperse it evenly, and you don't want your chips to burn up, you want to know how that is done. And so there are people that actually do that. But the thing is, did you read today's paper, this evening's paper? The monarchs have made a comeback after I don't know if they stopped using the insecticide that was killing them, but they're predicting this year the migration down to Mexico is going to be 200 million monarch butterflies. What a wonderful thing! I've been in that part of Mexico where they go to that one valley. It's an interesting thing. You know that the monarchs that leave here aren't the ones necessarily that get to Mexico. It's maybe several generations down the line that actually get there. It's like the man, the old carpenter, said, "I've had this saw for a long time." He said, "I've gone through 6 blades and 3 handles, but I've had this same saw for a long time." We gotta have something light. We can't have all tough things about There is a strength, even though appearing to be frail. Just think of a butterfly, like the winds like we had yesterday. How the butterflies can fly in that with those delicate little wings. One other animal that is shared with Taurus, usually only the male, boars. The bristles of a boar are like the rays of the sun, very direct. And boar's flesh in all mythology has been a symbol of wisdom, and Leo is a wisdom sign. Seasonally, when the sun is in Leo, it's fixed summer. It's past the center of summer, but it's hottest part. You know, it's forcing, the sun is like a ruler. It is like a king. It tries to make everything look like it, especially the grains. They all turn tawny like a lion or like the sun itself. And it uses its great energy to not only grow things, but to penetrate and to turn everything to grape sugar and things like that. It's the time of the great fires, great forest fires. The largest, in the United States, the largest urban and the largest mortality forest fire occurred on the same day, at the same hour, at the same degree of longitude. The Chicago fire and the Peshtigo forest fire occurred on exactly the same day, probably at the same time, and the thought is that they were both started by animals. Well, they started every 89 years or so. Uranus goes around the zodiac, and the first time that it entered Leo, which is big fire, Aries is small fire, it's flame, but big fire is Leo. And when Aquarius passed into Leo, and the first time that the moon passed over was that huge, disastrous forest fire and city fire at the same time. When Uranus, it passed, yeah, I'm sorry. I believe that was it, yes. Somebody who's got all, are you a historian?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, no, it was Aquarius. It was Uranus. Uranus and the moon. I've looked at the horoscope. It's how I learned to discover how cycles work astrologically, is from that event. And that was the key. Most of the animals are less active because of the heat. And the humans are, because it's the ripening season, are forced into a lot of labor. But the urbanites, this is the time they try to have their vacation. Everybody likes to play ball, and that's, you know, Leo is that. Let's play. Mythology. Mythologies from all parts of the world and all times have stories of puissant rulers or gods or things like that, or even pretenders. There are stories of wealth and puissance and glory and all of those kinds of things. And those are basically leonine kind of things. But there aren't any really purely Leo myths that you could say, yes, this is a Leo myth and nothing but. Most of the things, most of the myths that involve Leo come through the sun, which is ruled by Leo, because the sun is the self, and the self is the hero, and so the hero myths are basically leonine myths that work out through the sun. Of course, the divine part of our being, which rules and which dominates, is in all of the fairy stories filled with kings and what the kings do. Some of them are cruel, and some of them are proud, and some of them are demanding, and some are wise, but they're all kings. They're conquerors. For now, we'll just pass on that. Let's look at one fragment of a myth that relates to Leo. I don't know how to say this, but in cosmological astrology, it's different than horoscopes. For example, Pisces represents all of humanity together as a totality. Virgo represents each individual physical body, especially the sixth house is the individual physical body. The next hierarch above us, associated with Aquarius, are the angels. And opposite Aquarius is Leo. Now, if the Virgo Pisces pole represents the individual physical bodies, the Aquarius Leo represents the etheric bodies. And the etheric atmosphere of the whole solar system and of the Earth is indicated by Aquarius, but the individual vital body, the energy aura that we have, most of which is within 1 inch of the body, is ruled by Leo. And if we look at Heracles, the first task of Heracles is slaying the Nemean lion. And ever after, once he has slain the Nemean lion, he wears its pelt. And as long as he's wearing the pelt, he's invulnerable. Neither arrow nor spear or anything else can harm him. So the first task, if the archetypal hero is indicated by Heracles, and we, in trying to become superhumans in our spiritual evolution, the first task of initiation is developing this etheric vital body. It's given different names in mystic Christianity. It's called the golden wedding garment. And it is developed by various activities. It's too much to go into for now. But when one is so charged with that kind of etheric energy and with love, like, you're invulnerable to psychic attack because everything basically just bounces off of you. And it's very much like Leo. You don't think, if you're a Leonine person, you don't think defense. Because to a Leo consciousness, thinking defense is defeat. You're always, you know, I don't necessarily attack in a foolhardy way like Aries does, but you just never give up and you keep going forward. And so the organizing, the building of the golden fleece, not the golden fleece, the golden wedding garment for the alchemical wedding is what the slaying of the Nemean lion is about. Jacob, in two places, he prophesies for his children. And in one place he says, Judah is a lion's whelp. From thy prey thou art gone up. You know, it's like a roar I have overcome. In another place, when he speaks of Judah, who represents Leo, he stooped down, he couched as a lion, and as an old lion, who shall rouse him up? Again, we got those grouchy old Leonine kinds of qualities. Did I mention that? It's too far aside. Cosmologically, Leo represents all sustained assertions. Not just snap things, you know, but something, an assertion of power that is sustained. If you take the second derivative of that, that's Aries, jerk. No, I don't.
Okay.
It's not just something that you do at the start. Aries has a hard time with following through. Leo never does. It's continuous. It's ongoing giving. Now, this is a sign that has to give and give and give and give, just because that is its nature. It's an undying kind of love. If you think about it, if a star, like our sun, is in its system, is a field of evolution for all grades of creatures, from stones to beings whose intelligence is so far beyond our ken that we can't imagine what it is like, that being, that whose outward expression is the sun, has to be extremely responsible. Everything that is in it depends on it not going out. And that kind of thing appeals to the consciousness of Leo. It's not just complete conquest or mastery. It's something that goes on and on and on. The king always was there for his people. So we're not just talking about a force or an exertion. We're talking about sustaining life. And that's what vitality is. We're talking about the highest vitality sign. Leo rising has oodles and oodles of vitality. And it only needs to rest. I had a leonine kind of friend that could party for like 20 hours straight and then kneel down in front of a chair and just put his head down in the seat of the chair. Half an hour later, he was up and partying again. He just couldn't stop him. He had that kind of energy. So it is being something for others. It doesn't have to be a special thing, but it is just being a presence. It's something more than just being a parent, though it has parental qualities. It's more than being a teacher, though it has educational qualities or pedagogical qualities. It is there. And that's really strong. It is, we've been talking about all these things. We've been talking about making fun sort of the downside of some of these things. But if you think about it, it's giving is an extension of itself to the extent of the cosmos. When the sun gives off its light, that light isn't done. The sun in its light keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it keeps going out to the whole, it gets thinner, and the light is certainly much more attenuated, but it extends itself everywhere. And that is a leonine kind of quality. If everything isn't in it, if it isn't self-contained, it expands itself so that it knows that it is in everything. It reproduces itself in everything in the same way that it reproduces itself in ripening grain, so the ripening grain looks golden like the sun. It reproduces its being or its beingness or its existential quality everywhere. So we're talking here about a kind of consciousness that wants to be omnipresent. And a king doesn't have to be bothered with the details. In fact, that is a distraction. What we're talking about here is something, a consciousness that is there for the whole of it. Now, if a person identifies with this, rather than just giving, there is something of a tendency that it wants to dazzle. And sure, there are all those things that, you know, like you don't invite a Leo to a party unless you invite five others and let them fight with each other. But there is that thing where they do try to dazzle. But it's a continuous extension of self, even into the darkness that is unknown. So there is something, when you try to extend yourself beyond your current existence and think that your goodness is even in the unknown, that is speculation. If you've ever done a psychological study or read a psychological study on the psychology of gambling, a gambler is somebody that believes that his goodness extends into the future and he's going to be rewarded for his goodness. Well, we'll tell gambling stories at some other time. The power of self. There is a poise and a presence that says something like, I am a lion. A lot of people want to have skill. A lot of what people want to have knowledge. But probably the most important thing, especially as it's demonstrated in Leo, is to have self-presence. And in that self-presence, there's a positivity. I can. I will. It just doesn't quit from that. This is very different than when we looked at Taurus. It doesn't give up either, but that's for a different reason. Oliver Cromwell was a Taurus, but that was a diehard kind of a thing, and it wasn't the same kind of positivity that we find in Leo. Energy like the energy of Aries, that needs a rival. Power, which is self-contained, doesn't need a rival. It's like a plasma. It has so much of itself, it can give off light and heat on its own. Cosmologically, Leo represents light space. Last time when we talked about Cancer and the uterus, we said that that was dark space. It was womb-like. It was moist. And it built in a semi-unconscious manner. This is light space. This is opening space up to the possibility of things. And doing so in an overflowing way. Space is my playground. So you can say that this area of the zodiac is sort of like the center of the zodiac, the darkness or the night star and the day star, the dark space and the light space. Now this can take. This is why Leos can be educators, not teachers. Well, teaching sort of, but it's sort of they can... With their character, they can bring this out of other people. That if you're emanating that kind of positivity, it catches. Other people get it. Some philosophical ideas, centralization and unification. There's only one light. You can break it up into many different wavelengths, but there's only one light. And for us, basically, there's only one centralized light source. It is the centralization of attention in one's own being. Dedication. The philosophy of Leo is that it dedicates itself. It encompasses its own being. It demands from itself. Yes, Leo can be a very demanding outward lay, but only because it demands of itself. It's devoted. It's sincere. It just dedicates itself to everything. It has a tremendous self-commitment. I had a friend in my youth that would never give up. Never. He was always positive. And bigger kids would put a bear hug on him and he'd hug all the air out of him. He could knock out and he'd never say uncle. Just never like that. You know, you're committed to yourself. You can't quit on yourself. And when you have your entire being undivided, that's where the power comes. If you think, for example, about Gemini. We talked about Marilyn Monroe being a neurotic Gemini, can't make up her mind this way or that way. That's a lot of divided energy, and Gemini is not known as being a strong sign. But if you are centered in your own being and you have undivided attention, that's very, very strong. And you're always playing with yourself, so it's easy. You're like a cat. You sometimes you don't even have to pet a cat. You just say words to it, and it's down there, and it's what is it called? Autoeroticism. You know, it's down there rubbing its back on the ground and everything else. It's that kind of thing. Command. No negative, no alternative. Do. And you do that. If you have that kind of attitude, you get it done. No matter what the obstacles are, you get it done. Think about it. Where do any of our creations come but from ourselves? And if we're centered in our own being and we do things totally from ourselves, it's how everything is accomplished. So, between Cancer and Leo, they represent the two forces of the spirit, will and imagination. There are all kinds of philosophical differences on it, but to some extent it's co-equal. You can't tell whether the will informs the imagination or whether the imagination draws out the will. They work so much in harmony with each other. In fact, that's one of the best ways to learn willpower, is to hold an image. It's exceedingly hard to take even a simple image like a triangle or a circle or something like that and hold it in your consciousness for as much as 30 seconds without your attention breaking from it, without your image deteriorating or something else getting your, distracting you or anything like that. You develop a tremendous power of will that way. We're dealing with a wisdom sign here. We're dealing with the sign of the heart. And if it's all self-contained, it isn't on specific knowledge. It isn't even on specific emotions like love. It covers things in all. And when you look at things in totals, there is a wisdom that comes in. It isn't just intellectual. It isn't just feeling. It's all together, and that's the kind of wisdom that is there. And that's why it's so created. And with that kind of understanding, if you're in yourself, everything else and everybody else is also inside of you. And you can know everything. We have that famous statement that is from that Shirley Leonine character in the book, The Little Prince. It is only with the heart that one can see true. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Loyalty. If you're true to the divinity in yourself, you're true to others. This is a sign that is always loyal. It's an allegiance to a common light. If we are both of the same universal spirit, we are one, and we should always be loyal to each other. This is a sign of greatness. Some of the earthy signs can be very detailed and look at little things. Are you all right? You look a little tired or something. But this is, you know, like, for example, the people that make little teeny tiny towns with little teeny tiny houses and all the details inside, those are usually Taurus types of people. Leonine people want the big thing. They want the great image of things. Nature forces, heat. The sacrifice of self for the sake of others produces heat. We're not talking intensity here. Intensity is degrees of intensity, that's Aries. Heat is caloric. Radiance. Radiance is invisible, but yet it makes everything else visible. you know the way, you know, we get more of our heating or cooling from radiance than we do from convection. If you take and put someone in a room and you put the ambient temperature of the air down to like 35 degrees or something like that, but if you have the walls at 80, the person feels warm. But if you reverse it, the person feels cold. The body draws more from radiance than it does. And so this is that whole, I don't know, I'm trying to get an idea across where self-reliance, when you are self-sufficient or when you are strong in your own being, that takes in other people as education. That also is a radiant type of quality. So whether it's somebody trying to dazzle you or whether somebody that draws you into their realm just because of what radiates from them, that's what you're dealing with Leo. Anatomically and physiologically, the heart. And the heart is a semi-voluntary muscle. It's a spiral muscle. It goes, every heartbeat is like a twisting in. And can be controlled. Depending on how many horizontal striped muscles there are, the heart is a voluntary muscle. It's a powerful, I think it can spurt blood 20 feet or something like that straight into the air. When we say that it is the central purpose of life, the head sort of dances around by comparison with the heart. When you say that someone is hearty, or that they have heartfelt sincerity, or that someone is heartsick, you're talking about their whole being. It's the center of conscientiousness. This is part of the loyalty. You expect conscientiousness to be with the with Leo. It's the center of love, not Venusian love, but a greater kind of love, what would be called divine love. Though each vertebra is ruled by a different sign of the zodiac, the entire spine is ruled by Leo. And Leo, when they describe people that they don't respect, they like to say of them, they have wishbone and not backbone. That's a kind of attitude that they have. It's the carriage of weight, and it is a marvel of flexibility. Together with Cancer, the solar plexus is ruled by Leo. The involuntary clairvoyance and things like that that occurs with the solar plexus is the lunar part. The positive part that takes sunlight and converts it into vital energy in the inner body is the leonine part. Let's look at a few simple motivations. Probably we've looked at all of them. Good is seen as giving. Hence, there is generosity in giving gifts, in making presentation, in entertainments, in shows, children. Good is whatever is self-fulfilling or self-expansive. Sometimes the motive is just pure joy, pure fun, recreation. It's reliable. We've looked at that. More than any other sign, if it gets going, it is white hot in devotion or in sincerity. All the other things we've talked about before, let's see. Obviously, some of the potential negatives, egoism. I'm the center of everything. Back a long time ago, there was a Broadway musical called Wildcat. And there was a song in there that this was the introduction of Lucille Ball to the United States theater. And she sang that song that was a perfect Leo song, and she is a Leo. hey, look me over, lend me an ear, I'm all in clover, in debt from year to year. Remember that? But those opening lines, hey, look me over, that's Leo. Laziness. My being is sufficient. Why should I have to exert it? Stiff-backed inflexibility. I'm everything. Why should I bend? I'm in charge. I'm the star. Projected insensitivity to others' limits, which is a fancy way of saying cruelty. Sometimes an inadequate philosophy of no negatives. Sometimes there is an unwillingness to look at negatives, and it isn't always a positive thing that overcomes. Sometimes it just won't look at the negatives. I don't deal with negatives. Sometimes it's unreceptive. If you're pouring out that much all the time, it's kind of hard to be receptive. And sometimes the play gets to be over much. Leo is the sign that hams it up. The fifth house and the 11th house are both houses of the theater. The fifth house, which is abstractly ruled by Leo, is the kind of acting in the theater when a person takes the role and changes it to their character, like John Wayne. It was John Wayne in every role, no matter what the role was. The Aquarius is where one escapes oneself into the role. That's like Richard Burton. Richard Burton actually said in an interview, I heard him in an interview at one time where he said, I act so that people won't know who I really am. He wasn't really positive about himself. We won't say that because he was a Scorpio, but that might have something to do with it. Sometimes there is a tendency to oversimplify things. Not simplistically the way Gemini or Aries do, but simplify things, you know, like don't bother me with any kind of details or anything like that. And we've already looked at some of the other ones, pride, arrogance, conceit, bossiness, cruelty. Polarity, it's positive. It's not the most masculine, which is probably Aries, but it's certainly the most positive about things. Extremely extroverted. By attribute, it's fixed. It's consistent. It's reliable. By element, it's fire. And that is big fires, glowing fires, coals, stellar fires. The ruler is the sun, the central light, the central source, universal selfhood. Saturn has its detriment there. It doesn't like the coldness. As Saturn likes coldness and darkness, it doesn't like all of that light. Saturn in Leo is like putting a black stone out in the desert. I have a friend that lives in the desert in Arizona, where there is the black rock that from volcanoes that used to be. And sometimes they take in so much heat when the sun's beating on it that they just explode and they come out like shells. If anybody's in the way, that's it for them. Uranus is also in detriment. Altruism just doesn't care for a singular center of light. We're getting down to the end. Oh, this is going to be short. We're only going to be about 75 minutes or something like that. It's already 75? Oh, okay. People who have the sun in Leo. Here's somebody, again, I'm going to have to put some modern ones in here. Somebody who was very, very impressive. Diamond Jim Brady. Someone masterful but tyrannical. Napoleon. Here was somebody that was amazingly cruel, and he liked doing cruel movies. A Clockwork Orange, for example. Stanley Kubrick. Here's one that was very masterful, but couldn't get enough play. Alexander the Great. Sportiness, Isaac Walton. Here's somebody that even though he was a director and very much a Leo director, he still hammed it up and appeared in all of his movies, and he was terribly cruel. When Kim Novak in, what was that, Vertigo, when she wouldn't sleep with him, he had her fall into San Francisco Bay about 20 times. Oh, we got to retake that. That's Alfred Hitchcock. For the pure, cheery, simple, happy type, Booth Tarkington. Penrod, and if any of you ever read Penrod, everybody's, I guess I'm from another generation. Here's a conqueror, Edmund Hillary. He was a very spiritual man, but very independent and did everything in a grand way. Herman Melville. Here's somebody that was so big spirit, or is, I guess you're not alive anymore. Very unpretentious, but she just overpowered you with her character. Julia Child. Inspirational, Max Heindel. The cat-like grin, Joey Brown. Another one with a cat-like grin and a happiness about him, Bert Lahr. Here was one that was very demanding. He was benign, he was like a king, but when they formed a union, he became hard. Henry Ford. He's one of very noble and very clean-spirited, Estes Kefauver. This is one that you're glad does not give this class because he gives five-hour speeches. Fidel, yeah. Here's one that was very fun, but extremely proud, burning heat, Dorothy Parker. Here's one that was a big front man and marshaled everybody around him, Simon Bolivar. Here's one that was bright and fixed, Ogden Nash. Here's one that's like an old lion to this day yet that still thinks he's the brood lion, Mick Jagger. Here's one that it was pure theater, the spirit of the theater, Ethel Barrymore. All the Fiery Signs has swashbucklers, Alexander Dumas. For playing games and speculating and even forming conventions, Eli Culbertson. Here's for dignity, Father Knows Best, Robert Taylor. Here's one for sustained application of energy. I can imagine the airplane falling away from her and she's still flapping her arms, Amelia Earhart. I'm not giving up. I'm going to be the first woman around the world. Very manly, William Powell. Hilarious, Lucille Ball. Very expressive, and he even believed in Superman, but he became a cranky old lion, George Bernard Shaw. Here's one that had a very big picture of things and was very inspiring to some extent, Carl Gustav Jung. Here's one that made all those big pictures of the zodiac in the sky, Joseph Flamsteed. Here's one that was just plain big, Sally Struthers. Here's one that was very strong and very funny. Even though she talked about things that were supposedly ribald, she did it for the fun of it. Mae West. One that was very positive, Thorsten Veblen. Here's an ultra regal, two in a row ultra regals. Sir Walter Scott and Henry V, Prince Hal. Here's one that's a Cancer Leo borderline. Hemingway. Here's one that was always a big kid. He never grew up, and everybody loved him for it. He could even be doer, and everybody loved him. Leo DeRocher was a Leo. Here's one again for the big picture and splendor, Cecil B. DeMille. There's one for the light side of things, Christensen, the man who started seeing eye dogs. He's one of my favorite big spirited people, Madame Blavatsky. He'll never be anybody like Madame Blavatsky again. Individualism, Robert Mitchum. Clara Bow, just plain bigness. And here was one that shined like a star, and everybody made their hair like hers, even though it was bright. Jackie Onassis was Leo. Abstract rulerships, it rules kings, rulers, but not executives. Teachers, some sporting people, thespians, orators, promoters, education in general, the cinema, deserts, gamblers, circuses, gold, entertainers, actors. In the ascendant, usually larger bodies than normal. Sometimes big-chested, especially high-chested. And very often a swagger when walking, but not always. And sometimes they have a strange shield to their eyes that it looks like they have no pupils. And that's when there's a very strange kind of vain egotism. Have any of you ever been to Santa Monica Beach? Yes. You see that where they had that look like they've given all of their vital energy to muscles, and they had that dull look in their eyes, and that's a Leo rising kind of phenomenon. You're the first, you know, in the last 15 years, you're the first person that has ever been to Santa Monica Beach and that has seen that. Yeah. Yeah, I went out of my way to see it because I had heard so much about it. And they always seem bigger than they really are. Often they have short legs and sometimes are extremely strong. And they often have a very noble mien or bearing about them. Sometimes feline features and the big mouth people. Like when we said Joe E. Brown, where he had that mouth that opened up like it looked like a lion was opening its mouth and you put your head. Extremely vital people. They often have a proud walk, and sometimes they appear like they have flat noses like a lion or like a cat. Any of you who know my friend China, she has Leo rising, and the bridge of the nose is flat up in this part. And she even has those eyes that look like in Garfield, those things like that, the eyes with the circle like. Not a bang, but something of that nature. Sometimes, like Sagittarius, they have the domed or the big rounded forehead. They're extremely recuperative, extremely determined, and sometimes you see them bird-faced and very often stiff-spined. We'll go very quickly, since we are getting near 90 minutes, we'll go very quickly through the fifth house. The fifth house is an educational house, just as the first house was. The first house is on-the-job training. The third house is elementary school or technical school. But the fifth house is general education that everybody gets. That's like high school or college. It's as much broadness as you're going to get in life through education. The giving or the expressing, the fifth house represents opportunities for publication. Very often self-publication. For example, somebody has Neptune in the fifth house. Those are people that are cult poets or cult musicians, and they have a small coterie of people that follow them along like. The fifth house in general is opportunities for expression. Expressive desires, personal expression, places of expression. theaters, movies, enjoyment, pleasures, and entertainment. That's why the fifth house is a house of courtship. It's not the house of marriage. When you're counseling people, they're, you know, sometimes one is pointing at the horoscope saying, this is, you know, and they're thinking partnership, and the other one you can see is in the fifth house. They're having fun. You know, you got to get on the same tablet if you're going to write. So places like playgrounds or circuses or anything like that where one goes for fun. Casinos, gambling places. If it's just plain fun, premarital sex, or what's the term that they use for it? Casual sex is like the fifth house. The fifth house is also pastimes, hobbies, avocations, and pets. It's your chance. It's the opportunities that you have to be the king of the beasts or the queen of the beasts. Anything that is an offshoot from yourself, those kinds of opportunities. Children, creations, speculations. I have a friend that never, he has a square between the second house and the fifth house, and he never could tell the difference between investment and speculation. He never could tell the difference between honesty and dishonesty. He got kicked off as a stockbroker as a consequence. In mundane or horary astrology, the fifth house represents birth rates or public morals, general educational schools, theaters, carnivals, circuses, movies, things like that. Playgrounds, parks, nurseries, casinos, cabarets, together with the ninth house, publishing houses, adoption rates, picnics, stadia, Wall Street, and all of those sorts of things. That's as much as I have for tonight. Yes? Oh, I got... Oh, okay, I got the wrong person then. I'll have to check and see, check and see which is which. All right. That's it.